This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Friday afternoon, August 29th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. From weddings that cost thousands of dollars to surprise funeral expenses, obligations touch everyone. We'll explore how men and women of all ages can prepare and plan. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, inflation rises as tariffs ripple through the economy, while ending the de minimis exemption impacts millions of small package imports. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gus Fauché, chief economist with PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Now, the PCE number, the Personal Consumption Expenditure Index number, which is the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, came out today, and we could divine it, we could figure it out, do the calculations based on the two other inflation readings we got this month. But what is this PCE number, core inflation, 2.9% in July? What does that tell us about the state of the economy and the fight the Fed has ahead of it?
Inflation is picking up in mid-2025. Some of that is coming from tariffs, other just kind of trends in underlying prices. But this does make the Fed's job more difficult. We're going to see higher prices for many imports. That's going to boost overall inflation. I still think the Fed will cut the Fed funds rate later this year, but it does make their job more difficult in an effort to make sure that the labor market is strong, but that inflation is low around their 2% target.
Now, there has been some discussion from some Fed governors saying that the inflated prices because of tariffs is merely a one-off and that it will eventually work its way through the economy and the economy will adapt and adjust to this new reality, and that the mandate needs to be shoring up the labor market because the weakness is there, and that would be the justification for cutting interest rates.
That's right. The question is that do we see inflation move temporarily higher because of tariffs, but then things settle down? Or does, for example, tariffs driving up prices, does that mean larger wage increases for workers, and that in turn leads to higher inflation over a longer period of time? If that's the case, if these inflationary impacts are more than just a ripple, that makes it more difficult for the Fed to cut rates, because they need to they recognize that having inflation well above 2% over the longer run, that creates distrust in the economy. It makes the economy weaker over the longer run. So even if there is some pain involved there, they may have to keep rates higher for longer than they otherwise would.
And then you're going to hear a lot about this today and in the coming days and weeks, and that is the de minimis exemption, which allowed shipments valued at under $800 to enter the country virtually tariff-free. That came to an end around the world as of today. It was supposed to end 2 years from now, but the White House decided to move that date up until today. What does that mean for consumers that now these rather cheaper goods will pay the prevailing tariff as opposed to being tariff-free?
It's going to be much more expensive to ship these goods. The prices that we pay for them are going to be much greater. So this is going to cause significant problems for consumers. It's going to drive up prices. It's going to mean delays in getting products from overseas. We just have not been through this experience before, but I don't think it's good news for the economy. Let's put it that way.
And then for the average consumer, how did the de minimis exemption touch their lives?
You know, for a lot of the things that we ordered on Temu or things like that, those came in through the de minimis exemptions and they're mailed directly to the consumer. So that's going to take away that option. It's going to mean that if we do order those things, it's going to take longer to get them, that the prices will be higher. So it's going to cause a lot of headaches.
Gus Fauché, chief economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, how to survive life's endless obligations without draining your bank account.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Obligations add up. Weddings, funerals, family events, and friends celebrations strain budgets for men and women of all ages, forcing tough choices between loyalty and financial reality. We welcome in Craig Bolanos, co-founder and wealth advisor of VestGen Wealth Partners in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, thank you for joining us today. And it's such an honor when a bride or groom-to-be asks you to be in their wedding party, and then you hear about the bachelor or bachelorette party. Then you look at the price tag for the suit or the dress, or maybe it's a destination wedding, and by the time you add all of that up, you kind of wish they didn't ask you.
Rob, you can't make this stuff up. I had a bona fide conversation with one of my 24-year-old son's best friends who said, "Mr. Bolanos, I've had three weddings and a funeral. My finances are upside down now after the summer." And you're right. What an honor to be asked to be in people's weddings. But you have to be willing to be honest. You have to be willing to be vulnerable and ask for a little bit of grace when you make yourself vulnerable. Because depending on the all-in cost, you might not be able to pull it off.
Now, what are some strategies for bowing out gracefully from a wedding invitation such as that, especially if it's a destination wedding, it's a destination bachelor or bachelorette party, and you just simply can't afford the responsibilities of being in a wedding party?
You know what, Rob, if you're going to say no thank you, you almost hope it's a destination wedding because not everybody can afford the trip to go to Hawaii. That being said, when that wedding is still local, that doesn't mean it's going to be cheap because you're right. You may have a shower gift. You may have the clothing. You may have the bachelor or the bachelorette party. You may have this. You may have that. And I think it's just this. If you're being invited, and especially if you're being asked to stand up in that wedding, that means you have a great relationship with that bride or groom. And when we have great relationships, sometimes it's as simple as saying, "Hey, I need to visit with you. I need a little bit of help." And that help I'm referring to is, "I'm not in a financial position to participate, so let me know how I can still be present, but I want to be present in such a way that I'm not upside down financially." And that's such an uncomfortable conversation to have, but when we do that, trust me, the other recipient or the other person asking is going to give you the grace that you need.
Now, on top of that, if you don't want to sound like an Eeyore when your friend is in it, on the cusp of a very joyous occasion, you know your friends well enough that you know who's about to get married. You know, if you have a friend who's been dating somebody for a couple of years and they're talking about getting engaged, that maybe you should start saving a little bit here and there so you're ready to afford the wedding celebration a year or more down the road.
Oh, I love it. Rob, that's exactly what I told the friend of my adult son. I said, "Hey, you had three weddings and a funeral. The funeral wasn't expected, but those three weddings," I said, "was everyone engaged?" They said, "Yep." And I'm like, "Well, that means you had time to plan." So, Rob, when you're in that season and you're in that age that the people you know, love, and trust are going to be getting married, that's why you have to have a budget. You got to start telling your money where to go instead of wondering where it went, and then participate in that wedding with passion and vigor, but make sure you understand the difference between needs and wants, because you can be in attendance. You just don't need to spend the full freight. Do it your own way that's reflective of your personal situation.
Now, did this person really have three weddings and a funeral? Because this sounds very much like a reference to the movie Four Weddings and a Funeral, which came out longer ago than I wish to admit.
You know what? I'm not making this up at all. My oldest son is in D.C. He works for the Department of Defense. And when I spoke to his friend this summer, someone we grew up with, they literally said, "Mr. Bolanos, what do I do?" Because a lot of those bills for his friend are currently riding on a credit card. And I said, "Hey, we're going to do everything we can to get it transferred to a low balance card. And then we're going to be relentless and pay this off with a vengeance between now and the end of the year." And that's the program that we're currently on. So it might have sounded a bit like a movie, but that was ripped right out of real life, Rob.
Craig Bolanos, co-founder and wealth advisor, VestGen Wealth Partners in Inverness and Downers Grove. Find him online at GetRetiredStayRetired.com. And coming up next, a look at Labor Day travel as gas prices hit their lowest level since 2020.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Labor Day travel is in full swing. Airports will be crowded while gas prices drop to their lowest holiday levels since 2020. Joining us to discuss is Joe Sweeterman, professor of Public Services and Director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University in Chicago. Joe, thank you for joining us today. And 17.4 million people are expected to travel between through TSA checkpoints at the airport through September 3rd for the long Labor Day weekend. And this is an opportunity, Joe, for the airline industry and for the TSA to show off all they have learned since the service meltdowns of 3 years ago.
That's right. And, you know, the market is so fickle right now. We just have huge volumes on Labor Day weekend. Then you go on a Tuesday night and airlines are saying demand is weak. So this weekend really shows how that leisure travel market's in full tilt with attractive fares. And so far, TSA lines look pretty good. Airlines, though, have learned, as you say, the hard way a few years ago about understaffing and not having spare planes. I think we're in a better position than we were a year ago.
Now, yesterday when we talked about the introduction of the new Amtrak Acela trains, we had a larger discussion just about just moving the American population, which is 300 million plus people in the U.S., traveling around in infrastructure that was built for a much smaller country. And talk about just the advent of budget airlines, the Southwests and the Spirits of the world, as long as Spirit is around, and how important they were in making air travel accessible to the average middle-class customer.
Oh, just huge. In fact, you know, I worked in the airline business in the mid to late 80s. And, you know, when fares got below $100, we thought that was just a remarkable thing. And back then, $100 was, you know, a lot more money than it was today. So we saw the just steady decline in fares just year after year. There are a few interruptions, but with Allegiant and Spirit and Frontier and others, you know, the big guys really know they have to have that bargain basement product now in basic economy. So they have learned to carry a lot of really discounted traffic, and travelers have learned how to accept non-refundable fares without checked baggage. And that's really driving a lot of the growth right now.
And then for the people who are traveling this weekend, if you're trying to take a family vacation somewhere, what is there market research that indicates, you know, what is the tipping point between, well, let's drive to this destination versus I found a great fare, let's fly?
All right. And we're seeing now a shift toward driving for trips under, say, in that 200 to 300 miles slot. You know, cars are different now. People have advanced entertainment systems. Cars are so comfortable and fuel efficient. But the airlines, you're just seeing a steady decline in that short hop travel. And that's also been good for Amtrak and intercity bus. So we've been tracking Amtrak this holiday weekend, and so many trains to Chicago are sold out. There's just not enough coaches. And so if you don't have a car and you want to take a trip in that short hop range, it's pretty slim pickings right now because demand is quite good.
Joe Sweeterman, Professor of Public Services and Director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, it's Entrepreneur Friday, and we meet the chef bringing sustainable Mexican seafood to Pilsen.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. Markets are lower today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist at CFRA Research in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Sam, thank you for joining us today. It sounds like investors looked at that PCE report on core PCE, core inflation, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, and determined that maybe that interest rate cut in September is not the slam dunk that was originally thought.
Well, Rob, good to talk to you again. Certainly, investors will have to run a gauntlet of economic reports between now and when the Fed makes its announcement on Wednesday, September 17th. And so not only did we have the PCE number today, but we'll have employment data next week. We will also have retail sales and industrial production, all of which could present a challenge. But I still think that we are likely to see a rate cut at the upcoming Fed meeting. And I think that's not just my opinion. It's what most of Wall Street is projecting, as shown in the CME Group's Fed Watch indicator. So a good 87% likelihood that the Fed will cut rates in September.
And also, how much of today's market activity is just some people trying to pocket some cash after a fairly decent run?
I think that's a very big reason for today's downward move. August saw a 2.5% gain through last night. Normally, it posts a decline. And we are also heading toward a new month on Monday, and that being September, the worst month of the year with the lowest reading in terms of price change. And also it fell more frequently than the market rose in September. But I still think that it's going to represent a dip buying opportunity because the fourth quarter tends to be the best quarter of the year as investors look ahead a full year to new earnings growth, et cetera.
What is it about September that makes that month such a dog as far as the stock market is concerned? Because it's a rule that generally is held up over the years and regardless of what's going on in the world.
I think two factors. One is a lot of investors are coming back from extended vacations, reevaluating their portfolios, the economic outlook, et cetera, and repositioning their portfolios. But probably most important is that mutual funds have fiscal year ends in October. Most of them do. And as a result, they want to get rid of the stocks that have underperformed because they don't want to admit to shareholders that they still hold these dogs. So that is another reason why we could see downward pressure on stocks in general in September.
On the inflation front, it sounds like the de minimis exemption to products being mailed or shipped into the United States under $800 is going to go away, and that will result in price increases on a lot of these smaller items that e-commerce businesses, you know, that's really their bread and butter. How is that going to change the inflation picture?
Well, I think it will make inflation stickier. It has been something that has been discussed, been floated by the administration for quite some time. So I don't really think it's anything new that investors will have to deal with. But at the same time, it will end up being a one-time increase in inflation because this time next year, in a sense, it'll cancel out the year-over-year change.
And then very quickly, it seems like some Fed governors are coming around to the idea that whatever is happening with tariffs, the impact on prices will be temporary. It'll make its way through the economy. American producers will adjust, and that their job right now is to watch for weakness in the labor market.
I would tend to agree with that. But we do find that whenever prices go up, consumers try to find ways to work around it, whether they, you know, downscale going from brand names to generics, et cetera. So we could still end up seeing some weakness in GDP growth in the coming quarters.
Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Research, Chief Investment Strategist at CFRA Research in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, on Entrepreneur Friday, we meet the chef behind a sustainably sourced Mexican seafood restaurant inside the Pilsen neighborhood.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday. We welcome in Chef Marcos Asensio, co-owner of Marisco San Pedro in Thalia Hall in Chicago's Pilsen neighborhood. Chef Marcos, thank you for joining us today. Now, this restaurant opened last year. It features sustainably sourced seafood, a curated wine list, and seasonal cocktails. And you and your partners have a very deep culinary background. So what made this location attractive to you?
Hi, thank you, Rob. Thank you for having me. I mean, there's really no shortage of just awesome Mexican seafood in the South Side, where I was born and raised in the Little Village neighborhood. But we wanted to just make something different and, you know, an innovative menu, still honoring our tradition and just, you know, kind of like how we eat. If you came to my house, this is what I would kind of feed you, with just a lot of, you know, spice and just all the Mexican flavors that we can, but just keeping also like true to the product and doing the least possible to it.
Now, you grew up in Little Village, and you have had success with other locations throughout the Chicago area, but now you're in Pilsen. Now you're not too far away from where you grew up. What emotionally for you, what's it like to actually plant your flag near where you grew up?
I mean, it's pretty cool, actually, you know, to think that a place where I would go on my way home and just eat, you know, and that pretty much party, and you know, there's awesome places there, to now having the actual keys to a place there, it's really cool, and especially a place like Thalia Hall.
Now, I do want to ask you about this is sustainably sourced seafood. And this is a question I always love to ask restaurateurs in which where seafood and fresh seafood especially are a big part of the menu. And that is, how does it get to you on a daily basis? And how do you make sure it's fresh, especially if you know it's not coming from Lake Michigan?
Oh, no, actually, yeah, no, definitely. It's, I mean, the purveyors that we use are some of the top, and if not in the, you know, in the city or in the country. So we make sure that we're working with the right people to give us the right stuff. And I mean, our quality, when we inspect it, that we come in, we get stuff pretty much every day. It's like fresh. Sometimes it's been caught the night before and it's flown into us. So it's pretty exciting to see just all the product that we get. I mean, we probably go through maybe 60 to 70 pounds just of tuna alone.
Yeah, because I was really wondering, because Chef, I live not too far away from O'Hare, and you hear the planes coming in, you know, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. They're all cargo flights. And if I'm up that early, I'm wondering to myself, how much of this that's flying over my head right now is going to be served in somebody's restaurant tonight? Because this is all the fresh fish being flown in from elsewhere.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and you could definitely bet on it that that is, you know, probably our fish that's coming in that day.
And then when you try to tap into these culinary traditions, and I always ask this of our culinary Entrepreneur Friday guests, is, you know, how much testing goes into a particular meal or a particular entree before you feel you want to actually, you know, serve it to the customer?
I mean, it all depends. I mean, it's kind of how you're feeling of your dish when you're creating something. You have an idea. It could be a couple of days. It could be a couple of weeks. But you're constantly tweaking it. And I mean, we're big on collaborating within, you know, we surround ourselves with really good people. And we just like to pick everybody's brain. So it's kind of like, all right, what do you have an idea for this? It's missing, or we'll taste it. And it's like, all right, it's missing something. What is it? Then the other person can be like, oh, add this other, you know, something that's going to give it texture. So yeah, it's kind of hit or miss. I mean, sometimes, like I said, it's a couple of days or a week, maybe sometimes a little longer. But well, it's until we're ready that we feel comfortable and we're really happy and it's craveable. That's when we put it on our menu.
And then when it comes to coming up with entrees and then coming up with flavors and seeing how they all work together, does it strike you like music? Do you have just inspiration? Maybe it comes to you in the car, or maybe you're in the shower, or you're just doing something else and you think, I have to write this down right now because the idea is going to disappear from my head.
Oh, absolutely. Or I get into the kitchen right away, and if I have the product, you know, I'll write it down and just start playing with food. But yeah, it comes in all the time, or definitely from traveling. I love to travel and just tasting other, you know, other cultures' food. And then I get an idea from there where it's like, oh, I can mix this. You know, we'll take like Japanese and Mexican. It's like, oh, Japanese ingredients, Mexican spice. We do a lot, like with my partners, I have a French guy and a Sicilian guy, and it's like we incorporate that stuff that we grew up eating and just creating those memories.
Chef Marcos Asensio, co-owner of Marisco San Pedro and Thalia Hall in the Pilsen neighborhood. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A credit card balance transfer can ease high interest debt, but fees and expiring promotions mean they only work if you repay them on time and with discipline. Joining us to discuss is Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst for Bankrate.com, based in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And of course, we will have a federal funds rate cut more than likely by the end of next month. But if you are a credit card holder and you are carrying a balance, what is the current interest rate that you have to pay?
The average is 20.12%, which is close to a record high. It was about 20.8% last summer. Very, very high, though. Many people are paying 25, even 30%, sometimes more.
So if you are carrying a credit card balance at an interest rate of 20 to 30%, it is almost a no-brainer to get yourself into a credit card with a 0% balance transfer promotion and try to pay down that debt as quickly as possible.
Yes, this is my favorite tip for credit card debt payoff. Cards like the U.S. Bank Shield Visa have 24 months with no interest on balance transfers. That is a huge tailwind. You could pay less than $300 a month to pay off the average credit card balance, which is around $6,500. A couple caveats. One would be the transfer fee, which is usually between 3% and 5%. The other is that you just have to make progress. You don't want to use this as a shell game to move money around. You want to stay disciplined about paying it off because the interest rate goes way up at the end of the term. But used properly, a 0% balance transfer is the best way to pay off credit card debt.
And then generally, how many people are carrying a credit card balance and for whom this would actually be a very good idea?
Almost half of cardholders carry debt from month to month. 46% of credit card holders carry debt from month to month. Interest rates are close to record highs. No shame. I mean, if you have credit card debt, you have plenty of company. The cause is often practical stuff like medical bills, car repairs, groceries, things like that. But you have to make it a priority. These interest rates are much higher than we see on other products.
And then what is the impact on your credit score when you open the low or no the no interest balance transfer credit card? And how can you watch it change if you really chip away at that debt?
There might be a small negative impact in the short term, maybe 5 or 10 points off your score in the first few months. Medium and longer term, though, a balance transfer card can really help your credit because it can help you pay down your balance more quickly. That's really the biggest benefit. You just want to make sure you're making progress. The danger here is if you don't, then that could land you in a worse spot with your credit score. You know, if you use this available credit only to spend more and dig the hole deeper, that's an issue. Sometimes people think it's weird to use a credit card to pay off other credit cards. You do have to be disciplined about it, but the real benefit is that 0% rate. I would say don't add any more purchases. Just freeze your balance where it's at. Divide what you owe by the number of months in your 0% term. Really try to stick to that level payment plan.
Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst, Bankrate.com in New York. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour.